Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Point of View.
Legal matters.
All right, as we welcome Ntabise Ntobazana into our studio just after 9 o'clock, it's 2 minutes after nine. Hello, Ntabise.
Hello, Ospimela. How are you?
So they're all waiting with their problems. And we're eagerly waiting to hear from you today. So start dialing in, folks. Let's do it quickly so that we can answer, we can get through as many of your questions as possible. And you are very welcome to also send a voice note on 063-688-0959. The calls, as you know, 086-000-0959. For both, you don't have to tell us your real name. You can remain anonymous if you like. And we promise you we'll try as much as possible to help you with all those legal matters. Okay, Ntabise, I have to tell you, are you glued to your screens?
It's become white noise, like I said last time, because we listen even though we don't watch most of the time. I can't believe what we're hearing.
I cannot.
The question is,
for those of you who are in the legal fraternity, you've known about these things all along, ne?
Not all of them.
I cannot.
Some are surprised, to be quite honest.
I never.
Yay,
corruption is hectic. You people must know. Magistrates, we've been told about the level of corruption. So you people know. You people know.
Do you know what we know? What we know is that if you appear in front of a certain magistrate, you won't get what you want because there's always a ... that appears
so
after
The question is, what has made it so difficult to root out the corrupt magistrates and so on?
Because there are
mechanisms to deal with those people, right?
Yes. So what happens is that if you do find out that a certain magistrate is not working in accordance with their duties, you need to report them to the Magistrates Commission. Well, you start with internally, chief magistrate, and then from that you take it out and then they can be disciplined accordingly. But the fear that is usually instilled is that if you take on a particular magistrate who's notorious for whatever, they're going to hold you in contempt of court as a legal practitioner. And if you're being held in contempt, it means you're going to be laying downstairs. Do you know what I mean? Because you're being insubordinate.
Isn't there a way to report this thing with anonymously, maybe as a tip off? Isn't there a mechanism to do that?
I'm sure there's a way, but
they will always know.
The arrogance, I suppose, of people in those positions and with that kind of power, they will want to know who it is. And then once they know that it's you, appear in front of them and see flames. your matters will not move just because it's you, not because of the client. And now the client is on your back because you are not doing your work. Whereas it's not even about the papers. The papers are fine. The issue is that it's the practitioner that is representing. I went through that once in court.
Do you think this is going to bring some level of reform?
I hope so. I hope some changes will happen as a direct result of these things, that people will start acting accordingly, knowing that they may likely be asked to go give evidence because their names have been mentioned.
I'm horrified. Yes. I am horrified.
No, it's bad.
It's unbelievable. What we are seeing is absolutely shocking. So I don't know. I mean, us lay people are thinking, okay, to what extent can we trust all of you?
I know, right?
From the police all the way to
the justice system.
It's quite scary.
Yeah, it already is.
All right, so dial in, please, with all your legal questions. And Ntabise is here to respond to all of those. And as I said, you don't have to be, you don't have to give us your name. You can remain anonymous if you like. Not a problem at all. You can send a voice note as well. 086-000-0959, or you can send voice notes on 063-688-0959. Let's look at some of the issues that you brought to the fore.
Yes.
So the first one.
Yeah, so this one, unfortunately, because I wasn't here last week, we didn't get to touch on it. This one was defamation and disclosure of HIV status, right?
Yes.
Excuse me. So what happened is that an employee of National Union of Mental Workers, NUMSA, was acting in their official capacity and disclosed. Okay, this case is public.
Yes.
So the names are written already here. Mm-hmm. So me mentioning the names is not really dealing with anybody's privacy.
Mm.
So anyway, he disclosed that Molatri had previously informed him that a colleague, which is the respondent, had HIV.
Mm-hmm.
And in that meeting, it was attended by approximately 14 NUMSA members.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, it was convened to address confidentiality and other things.
Yeah.
So Zito prefaced his statement by warning that it could cause commotion and the disclosure led to emotional distress for the respondent, who felt betrayed and later sought psychological support.
Mm.
So with all of this that was happening, this person then said that, no, this was a breach of their privacy.
Mm.
How dare you say what you said about my status? This is not sometimes to be consumed in the public. So although Zito apologized, the respondents interpreted the statement as simply as, ah, you're doing it for the sake of, not because you understand the kind of impact that it did on me. And then the respondent continued to be employed by NUMSA. So on appeal, this was an appeal against a decision of the court, a court which had upheld that the respondent's claim for defamation, and then it was awarded 100,000. So, in other words, the person whose HIV status was spoken of, she was awarded in the initial court, the court below, an award of 100,000 for defamation.
Yes.
So now, in appeal, the court had to decide if indeed it's defamation or it was a breach of privacy, because these are two different worlds. Because defamation means I'm talking lies about you, I'm ruining your character,
and all
of those things. But a breach of privacy means that confidential information that is true about you, but that doesn't need to be consumed by the public, has been made
without your permission.
Correct. So now that is what the appeal was about. So the person who actually made this information public was saying, no, it's not defamation. I agree that I breached privacy.
Confidentiality.
But when it comes to definition, I disagree. So the court now, the higher court now says, the disclosure of her HIV status, while potentially a breach of privacy, did not meet the requirements of defamation.
Mm.
The pleaded case did not include the necessary elements to sustain a defamation claim, particularly the absence of animus in urine. In other words, it injured her character and her reputation, right? And the failure to plead breach of privacy as a separate cause of action. So the court erred in conflating the two and finding that the disclosure constituted defamation.
Hmm.
So, as a result, it is clear that articulation of the specific right infringed and the respondent's reliance on general harm to dignity and reputation was insufficient.
Hmm.
And the appellant's argument that the information was already known was not supported by evidence, but this does not alter the legal deficiency in the respondent's pleading. So the appeal, was upheld on the order that the plaintiff's claim is dismissed with costs. So now I think for me it spoke a lot to defamation.
Because
a lot of people tend to think that something is defamation when it really is not defamation. There's a checklist that you need to meet. So just because I am saying something about you that is true, it is
but
well
I don't
known.
Like it, because it's for me, it taints my reputation.
Correct.
But that's a personal view.
Correct. Mm. So somebody in your shoes, objectively would it be deemed as defamation? And if the requirements do not meet it, then no. So you would hear people, no, they're saying this and this about me on Facebook
defaming
or whatever,
me,
they're defaming me.
But it's
me,
true.
But it's actual
like
facts.
If someone said you were divorced, which is probably true.
Yeah.
But it's defaming you because you don't want to be called divorced.
Yes, but it is actual.
But it's true.
It's true. Mm. But when somebody is now calling you names
and all
of those things, now that's defamatory. Mm. And especially if it leads to loss of income, loss of a job,
Let me ask you this. If the person can prove, now this is away from this particular case, if the person can prove that even though a particular fact is true, but that fact does discriminate, in other words, it lends me to be discriminated against, would that be defaming?
Not necessarily, no. It doesn't fall within the ambit of defaming. Mm. Because defaming means what we are saying that...
Gemaka.
Mm. And it's tearing down your reputation intentionally with lies. But if it is true and it is out there, but as a direct result of being out there, it is now affecting your mm-hmm. business.
Or you don't get a job.
Or you don't get a job as a direct... Yeah. Like you were arrested and maybe it doesn't reflect on your... Mm. Your SAP 69s, then with that, you can say, but for your exposure, I would not have. But remember, I think about a month ago, we mm-hmm. dealt with a case mm. wherein somebody got a job as a direct result of certain information being withheld. Had the employer known about that, you would not have gotten a job.
I'll tell you what, I think it gets for me quite murky in circumstances where society hasn't moved, even though the law has moved, society hasn't moved in this sense. So let us say I'm looking for a job at company X and I come as I am, and perhaps I present myself in a particular way. Yeah. My credentials are all good. I present myself very well. And someone in the company happens to know me from social circles and mentions that she's lesbian.
Yeah.
Right? And then... just by virtue of the fact that they've mentioned that I am particular, maybe, you know, of a particular orientation, the company culture feels uncomfortable about hiring me.
Yeah.
And I get to know that it's precisely because
of that information.
Of that orientation that I didn't get the job. What then? Because yes, I may be, it may be true, it's no one's business, but someone went out of the way and I got discriminated against because of that. How do we then deal with that?
So the Employment Equity Act actually deals with that. It actually deals with that. It's automatically unfair.
Yes.
When you are discriminated against due to your sexual orientation, your religion, your race, your culture.
Mm.
So even if you don't disclose that you're pregnant and then it so happens that you tell them after you get the job, they cannot discriminate you as a direct result of that. So if you were to find out it's a direct result of you having a specific sexual orientation and you didn't get a job, you can't take the employer to the CCMA, even though it didn't employ you, because it is unfair discrimination.
Again, Tavi saying, let's say the two parties do argue it out.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they say, look, our company culture, let's say, for instance, it's a school. It's a school.
Mm.
Our company culture just does not. So we have we reserve the right to choose the best candidate, not necessarily the most qualified candidate, the best candidate for our environment.
Mm.
And in this environment, we have a particular culture. I don't know. Let us say it's a Christian. I don't know. I'm just giving examples.
Mm.
And they feel that this for us is not the kind of environment where we want to expose blah, blah, blah. You know how people can argue things out. Expose children to whatever. And I'm not, please don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying this may be an argument presented to whoever is presiding over the matter to say, we have the right to choose the kind of culture that we then have in this environment. Therefore, we chose person X over person Y, not because they don't qualify, but because there was a better fit.
Mm. So, unfortunately, your policy and your culture does not override the law. It doesn't override the constitution.
Guys, it's so important because I think even with small businesses, and this goes to, especially if you're running a business and you happen to decide upon either letting go of someone because you heard something, or you suddenly go off on an employee, just be careful. It's not so much about your preference. It's about the law.
It's about the law. So, but unfortunately, a lot of people do not know that this preference thing doesn't override or supersede the law. So if the employer says this is what I want, they take it as law, and then they're scared to speak up or even challenge any situation. I don't know if you remember, we did a case, we talked about a case rather, you and I, wherein there was a white police officer versus a black one, and then he had more credentials, so to speak, versus this one. They both passed. Actually, they passed the test.
Mm-hmm.
He got like an 89 or something like that, and this one got like a 65. But this one was taken in, and then he took the SAPs on unfair labor practice to say that why did they pick him when he had higher marks. Mm. And the argument is that the advert was specific to say it was making the space equal. So it was a BEE situation. You could have had the better marks, but the advert were for somebody who is not white in order to make sure that people in that particular management are equal, because there were a lot more white people there versus the black people.
I want to push some more on that later. For a company that suddenly discovers that, and I do not declare, if I do not declare that, for instance, I have special needs, purely because I know that every time you bring that up, companies feel iffy about it. Let us say on paper and upon maybe our interview was virtual, who knows?
Mm.
And on paper, everything is good and that interview went well, even virtually and all. And I do not declare that I have special needs. And then present myself to the workplace with the special needs and then saying, by the way, I'm going to need 1, 2, 3.
Yes.
Or a ramp, you know, something as simple as a ramp.
Yeah.
Or since the building that we are in does not have a ramp, can I perhaps work from home?
Mm.
Or can you maybe, you know, upgrade my device or whatever the case may be? Would that be grounds for the company to say, you didn't tell us?
No.
Nah.
Not at all. I was actually trying to find, I think it's section
So five. those extras that the person may say they need to perform their duties would be absolutely within the law. The company cannot turn around and say, but you never told us you're going to need a special car.
Correct. Correct. Because the advert wasn't specific to say that it is supposed to be for able-bodied. It just was an advert for somebody who qualified for this. And I qualified. Even my interview shows that I qualified.
Yes.
So the fact that I am not fully able versus you is neither here nor there. I can do the job.
And just again to clarify, no one has to declare.
No.
Guys, are you
hearing?
because I think this is so important when people hire people to know that no one has to say anything beyond what you ask them, actually.
Yeah. I remember in our profession, for example, about two or three years ago, before then, there was always a requirement when law firms hire you that they would want you to have a driver's license.
Yes.
It is not part and parcel of being a candidate attorney. You don't have to have a driver's license. Yeah. All you need to be is have an LLB and be able to go and appear in front of a magistrate. That's all that is required. But then a lot of law firms, in particular white law firms, would use that as a discriminatory fact, because a lot of black candidate attorneys would not have a driver's license. Because
Let alone Koloi.
And then part of the driver's license request would be, have your own vehicle.
Of course.
You know what I mean? So you already automatically disqualified for over 80% of the jobs that are being advertised then. A lot of black attorneys fought that. And then finally, the LPC made it a rule that you cannot put in your advertisement that a CA has to have both a driver's license and a car. Remove those things. But they're still subtly in there. But it's no longer a rule.
Let's take, let's start with a call. Let's start with a call. Nape is in Togoza. Hello, Nape.
How are you, Tinelo?
Hi, hello, Nape. How are you?
Yes, and I guess. Yeah, I'm having a problem here. I'm feeling dismissed.
Yes, sir.
And I looked for a lawyer. I found that lawyer.
Yeah.
That lawyer, he never disclosed to me that the Rule 25 is going to be applied at the Pagani Council.
Oh, no.
That's not the way of
it. Sorry, Nabi.
I went there.
I missed that. They didn't disclose any?
Rule 25 application.
What is that?
So a Rule 25 application is wherein you need to make an application as an attorney to represent your client. Because in the CCMA, it's not automatic for a lawyer to represent that client.
So you're saying didn't have it?
They didn't make the application.
No, they didn't make it.
Yeah, I was not aware of that.
Okay.
I was not told. And I paid. Then I got a sit down. We went to the sit down at the arbitration.
Yeah.
Then the commissioner said, no, I'm not going to be represented because Rule 25 must apply.
Mm.
And my lawyer must apply for that.
Yes.
Make an application to represent me.
Yes.
He could have done it verbally. Did he do it verbally?
No, by writing.
Okay.
Then it was declined.
Mm.
Why? Why? Why did you? Did they tell him why?
They have no, at the bargaining council, you don't have a legal representative, it's not allowed.
No, man, that's not correct, because the commissioner, yes, they have a discretion to decide whether or not an attorney can represent you. Ne? So one of the, these are the three rulings you could have gotten, whether it's done verbally or in writing. Ne? He could have dismissed it like he did, but the reasons should be that he is dismissing it because your case is not deemed to be that complicated, and that somebody, a lay person, can proceed and understand the proceedings. So you need to show that it's in the interest of justice. So they need to explain why. So that's the one thing. The second thing is that if they were to say no, they could allow your attorney to at least sit in, even though he can't represent you. But even if they dismissed your attorney should have told you that the option could be that he can sit in the other room while you are busy with the arbitration this side. So that if you get to a point whereby you don't understand what's happening, you make a request to the commissioner to say, I'm not understanding what's happening. Can I have a 10-minute break to go get legal advice? So you can go to the other room and speak to your attorney. So it doesn't make sense why your attorney didn't know what was happening. But anyway, that's what was supposed to happen. Yes, isn't that?
Mm. Yeah, but tell me now. Why my attorney didn't disclose to me that there is a possibility that I'm not going to be represented because of Rule 25? Why?
Ish, I wish I knew why he didn't tell you, hey? Because that is part of the things that you have to do. As soon as your client comes and you find out, one, you're within the 30 days, so you don't have to do a condonation application, I get. So once you find out that you're within those 30 days, part of the paperwork that you're going to put in along with the LR 7.11 that goes with the new application for arbitration, part of the things have to be the Rule 25 application, got notice of motion, the founding affidavit that comes from you, so that the commissioner who's going to be assigned already knows they have to deal with that, and then they can give a ruling on the day of the arbitration. I'm so sorry you went through that, but that is part of what usually should happen.
Then
you want to know, Jorge, what remedies is there,
yes,
for you?
Yes.
Unfortunately, you're not going to get the reasonings to the commissioner up until the arbitration is over, because once the commissioner types or drafts the arbitration award, then they will deal with the Rule 25 application and give their reasons as to why. But with that being said, you can make a request to the commissioner to say, before he proceeds with the merits of the matter, can he give a written decision of why he denied your Rule 25
application? Yeah, no, it's written. They give a written decision.
And what did he say? What were his reasons? Okay, all right, no, it's fine. But if the reasons there are fall within the umbrella of, you know, your case isn't that complicated, and that he or she can be able to guide you as a commissioner, you don't need that kind of assistance, then, you know, it's likely it may be accepted. So going forward, if your attorney is still your attorney the way that it sounds like it is, let your attorney come and sit in the other room. And then as the matter goes by, you can keep asking him questions, ask for adjournments, and go and sit with him and say, they're asking me this and what, because he knows your case, hopefully. And then you guys can discuss it properly based on whatever questions that are happening that side.
Sure.
Sorry, man. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's okay.
Thank you. Wendy in Kilani. Hello, Wendy.
Hi. Good evening, ladies. Thank you. Thank you, Pamela, for sure. You know, I never call, right?
This is urgent. If she's calling, it means it's urgent. There's a crisis. How can we help you, Wendy?
No, I think you guys are touching on an incredibly important topic right now. You're talking about the defamation case, and then you jumped on to Kilani. You lasted for about 45 seconds on a topic which I think is incredibly important. Mm. The disclosure of people's private information, which has an impact on the ability to even have livelihoods.
Mm.
And your guest, your attorney there, touched on an issue which many of us, I mean, we're older now, but when we started to enter the practicing law, that wasn't exactly the requirement.
Yep.
You needed to have a car. You needed to have a driver's license. As a black woman coming from a small little township in KZN in Johannesburg, that requirement kept many of us out of the profession for many years.
100%, yes.
And it is absolutely, and we deal with that baggage till today.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's an important point to explore, because it's like when you think of the legal profession and you assess who's in it, who's successful and who isn't. Mm. You know, this is the history that we have to contend with, right? Mm. But I'd like to propose something. This is not a question.
Mm.
It's a suggestion. You know, these two topics of disclosure, and Pamela, thank you for putting sexual orientation on the agenda.
Mm.
The disclosure of someone's sexual orientation, if you combine that with this issue of lack of access to resources that enable you to enter a particular profession, you're dealing with multiple grounds of intersectional discrimination, which keep black women in certain contexts out of really important professions. And I'm not saying that there's a legal answer or there's even a legal question to it, but it is a reality in our society which is keeping us in certain economic conditions which we don't have to be in when the law is protective, but society and big corporates and even public sector institutions don't comply with the law, and people are left out of the economy.
Tabi is nodding profusely. So it's obviously an issue.
It's a real issue, and I always say, as attorneys, I feel like we need to go to therapy at least once a week, and not only because
I'm telling
of.
You, and please, can they not ask us to pay for that therapy?
Please, because it's too much. We have a lot going on.
I'm telling you,
we have to not only deal with our clients who are clients, and then we have to deal with the fact that as a black woman, when you walk into a courtroom, they already analyze you from stepping in, and then when you have to address the presiding officer, it's worse in the match courts, and you're supposed to address whatever, they start analyzing if you even understand the law, and yet the person that you are addressing, who's sitting on the bench, doesn't even understand the rule in which your application is. It's worse in the high courts. In the high courts, as black women, we are a minority, because when you walk in, it's white.
There we go.
And when you walk in, you're like one or two black people when you walk into a courtroom, and they want to treat you like rubbish.
Gosh, Wendy, thank you for that. Thank you for bringing that up.
No, thank you.
Jeez,
it's quite
something.
Yeah.
It's quite something. And we don't talk enough about
the
difficulties in your profession, for instance, and the barriers to entry.
It is insane. It is very hard to become an attorney, black professional. It is extremely hard. And when the doors open, you push it as hard to keep it open.
And you keep pushing.
Yes.
You keep pushing. Let's listen to another voice note.
I have a question. I was working for a company, for a private company, for 14 years. So after working for this company for 14 years, I want to understand something. They created a fake dismissal for me. And after creating this fake dismissal for me, busy currently at basically the CCMA, which for our organization is called the NBC. I want to know that hypothetically, if I was to win and I get an outcome, an award from the CCMA, and the company now decides that to go against that award, basically my question is, how can I sue a private sector company for basically damaging my reputation, my life, my career, you know, and basically they've got no evidence for whatever they charged me. I have various grievances. So I just want to know that, like, how can I go about the matter of suing a private sector company for basically creating a delinquent out of me, basically damaging my reputation, my mental health, etc. How do I go about suing a company, you know, for loss of income for the past 2 years?
This is such an important question
because
as you, number one, you know, obviously this individual speaks of loss of income, mental health issues, and you know, the reputation and all of that. There's so many things that you've got to weigh up.
Mm-hmm.
So once they've awarded you and said, whether it's, he speaks of the NBC, CCMA type arbitration mechanism.
Yeah.
And they say, no, it was unfair dismissal. you've got to weigh your options up, because can you really fight a big corporation, and for how long are you willing to fight? And it's, I think it's a personal decision one has to make.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it will take its toll on you.
100%.
It will cost you a lot of money.
Yes.
Maybe even a lot of time.
Mm.
Can you? It's not so much that can you, it's whether you're willing to.
Yeah.
Because of course you can.
Mm.
Of course you can. You can sue them. Mm. I mean, maybe Ntabi Singh can speak to the legal process that one can take.
The point of departure for me is that he said that the award hypothetically was in his favor.
Yes,
it is a court order. Just because it comes from a CCMA, people or some companies tend to think that it is not binding. A CCMA order is as binding as an order from any court.
Hang on. He's saying two things. He acknowledges that.
Yeah.
He's acknowledging that.
Yes.
But he's going further.
I think
it's the further that I'm yes. referring to. The further bit is whether over and above being awarded the fact that, you know, the CCMA says no, it was an unfair dismissal, and whatever the award was, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah,
you would have had to tell us that. Over and above that, you want to go and now sue them for the inconvenience and taking you through all of
yes.
this. I'm saying, are you sure you want to do that?
Mm.
Because you've already been awarded, as Ntabi Singh said, mm. right? By actually a court saying, okay, when we look at the labor laws of this country, you should be getting X,
mm.
whatever amount of money you've been awarded. And everybody acknowledges that it was unfair.
Yes.
You're saying, sure, I get that. I want to now fight them on the basis that they were unfair. And I want to now sue them.
Yeah.
That's a totally different legal battle.
Yes.
It's a totally different legal battle.
So my thing is, you can probably do it in conjunction with one another, right? What I'm saying is that you already have an award in your favor. Mm. So that is your ground.
Yep.
That is how you start your application to sue. To say, already I have something in my favor. If you were not in agreement with it, these are the options that would have been available to you, which you haven't exercised. So that is your first thing. Now your second thing is that over and above you being in contempt of a court order, you are now depriving me of my opportunity to go and get work, because he's saying they've basically declared him a delinquent of sorts, right? He's not employable.
But I mean, look,
they've ruined his reputation.
But I think many people in his situation
yeah.
rightfully feel disgruntled.
Yeah.
That, yes, I may have gone through the process and I've been awarded this, whatever it is that they gave
yes.
him. Yes. But they feel that there was reputational damage.
Agreed, yeah.
And people who were not in this process don't know what the outcome was.
Yes.
All they know is that I was fired, I was dismissed, and I was called delinquent or mm-hmm, whatever the case mm-hmm. may be. I'm disgruntled by that, and I want them to pay so that they no longer do this to somebody else.
Yes.
Talk to us about the parallel processes, because there is the NBC process, which he spoke of,
yeah.
which acknowledges the pain and all of that, but he wants them to learn from this process.
So with this, what is the CCMA outcome that he has,
mm.
what I'm saying is that I have already been declared to be not what you said I am.
Yes, yes. Someone has already found against the company.
Against that.
Yeah.
So as a direct result of you not even adhering to the contempt of court, my reputation having been cleared by that particular court order, I am now unemployable, because every time they call you for reference,
you keep damaging my reputation.
So that would be the process that you would follow. So it would be a situation where they can run parallel to one another. But like you said, it gets expensive. Make an application.
Well,
yeah.
Come, you know, they can be vindictive.
Extremely, because they're going to out litigate you.
Mm.
They have the resources.
They've got the pockets.
They're very deep. So once you've gone, look at the Vodacom guy, how long it's taken for this thing to end.
Yep.
Do you see what I mean? So it will be a situation of, okay, you're taking us for contempt and also for defamation.
Let's say you
win. After you win, they will take
they'll
you an appeal.
Until
it gets all the way to the Constitutional Court. And the higher it goes, the more expensive it becomes. But of course, there's always recourse for you. This would be the process to follow, and it would be easy for them to run parallel to one another or even make it in one application and let the court make a decision in that way to say, based on the outcome of the CCMA and the fact that I was cleared, they are continuing to do this, and therefore I'm not eligible to get work anyway. So that would be the way to deal with it.
It's a tough one.
It is.
And it's a tough one, and it's a personal choice, because perhaps whatever you've been awarded may be money that you could do something else with, or you want to take that money to go fight them some more. I think it's a personal choice.
Yeah.
It's a personal decision. Let's take a listen to a voice note.
I want to ask the question about the Black Coffee and Entle ruling that was made recently. It could be, maybe you explained it before, but I was not listening. Mm-hmm. I want to understand, because of the court said the marriage was in community of property, mm-hmm. because of the nuptial agreement was signed after the mahadi were paid. And most of us, we practice the same thing. Now I want to know if a case like that can be used as a precedent before the courts, or what's going to happen? Because now it seems like you are akareta, everybody who has done the same like process. Yeah, if maybe you can explain to me.
We had gone through it. We'll go through it again for many, because some of them are not like you, where you didn't hear. Some of it is that we're in denial.
Yeah. I think a great number is that, actually.
It's more that it's too difficult to process.
We have been talking about this way before Black Coffee's case.
People can't deal.
No, they really can't.
People can't deal.
Even back in the HP's case, how long ago is that?
So guys, you know what the thing is about all of this you've said, everything is that you are dealing with so many some people love to show off, ne?
Yeah.
And I've seen that. Some people love to show off and they have an engagement party. And then people come and witness you going on your knee.
Mm.
Before you even go to Mahadi stage, ne? Let me just tell you, my brothers, that right there commits you.
It's already a problem for you. Because if you choose not to marry her.
If you post this thing, that the thing that you posted on social media, and then you are doing the knee, ne? Before Fitla Kumakhadi, you promised her marriage.
Yes.
She then accepts on social media. You are in trouble, my brother. I got it. You are deep within.
It's Benekant.
You are already deep. Taking you out of there, my brother, you need Ntabise.
Yazin.
Taking you out of the social media post for content. Ushwil and that. Ushwil.
Okay. To answer you, Ntate, ne? If upatese mahadi or lobola before Waita lingelo las kowa washapa stepe, that marriage that you're going to enter into wherein you are signing things is not recognized over the customary marriage. So whether you have done all the rites and rituals or you have not, or you have paid $100 or paid the full mahadi,
or you took Instagram post and said, "Will you marry me? What's a maisa balloon? I wanna the helicopter that rides, will you marry me?" That's it right there.
That's it. Mm. Then you automatically are married in community of property.
That's it.
So
say that again.
You are
if you hire the helicopter, I want a helicopter ele that flies the little flag. Erin, will you marry me? Ne? Once you start there, post away, not clever. You're deep within. It's trouble. You're in trouble. Haraso bui kata baza makadi li mangwalo le ing. You when now we sa ringya na ewe how you. Where will you marry me? A wo poster. Holata papa. Holata. So I just Aigabi. We love our brothers and uncles and so on. We want them to know.
Please. Please.
To save them the problems that they're about to face.
Which they're already facing.
And this is why they're in denial.
Yes.
They cannot cope with this information. That's why they keep asking. Nana lerata.
Yo.
Repeat it for them, Tabisi.
Let me give you a better case versus your black coffee so that you can understand. Yeah,
the things that they are facing right
yes.
now.
Yes. There's a
closer
case
to home.
Closer to home. There's a case that was decided in Mbombela High Court, January of this year. So quite well before the black coffee thing.
Mm.
This man died after marrying his mfazwe pepper for 6 years.
Yeah.
Upon his death, the woman that he paid Mahadi for 45 years ago came.
Who was not living with him.
Who was not living with him.
Who he had not paid maintenance for.
Nexi.
Yes.
That piece of paper.
Basa tsunyane.
Mogele came with that piece of paper that Bomalume and everybody signed.
45 years ago.
45 years ago and said, this is my husband. And then this mfazwe paper, who is registered at Home Affairs, said, it's not possible.
Onza dutzile.
And the court said, ma'am, was 6 years. Please understand that you are not the wife. Your marriage from the start was void. Ribisa void ab initio. So, ma'am, please step aside. Let this woman of 45 years ago wind up her husband's estate.
Onza samosh.
Yes. So, to answer you, Ntate, anything you do after you pay Mahadi is null and void. The second you pay Mahadi and you did not sign an ANC before paying Mahadi, you're automatically married in community of property. If you are in a new marriage now, that marriage is not recognized by any law. The marriage that exists, ki the old one. And just so you are clear, we are looking at Section 3 of the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act. All you need to do is that you must be over the age of 18, Lili Tum. You must consent to be married to each other under customary law, and it must be negotiated and entered into or celebrated. It's not a requirement per se in accordance with customary law. So, Motamdim, fix your things before you die also. Go and divorce this person. If you are still married, because he said that some of them are in the same situation, go and divorce. Yeah.
Okay, I think we've got a voice note.
Okay.
I just want to know, are there any steps that one can take for an advocate that did not want to disclose their cost of service? So when you go to them and ask, how much will this cost me? And they keep showing you the consultation fee only. Are there any steps that you can take to say, okay, I came to you several times, inquire how much will this kind of service cost me? And there was no straight answer that was given to me. There was no explanation to say this is the process and by the end of the process, this is how much you would have spent. And secondly, I would like to know, in terms of divorce, when assets are shared and one decides to buy the other one out, what's the duration for that particular buying out that needs to incur? Like, how long can we give one to say, we're giving you this amount of duration for you to buy the person out, or else what therefore can one do or should do to follow it up?
All right. To answer the advocate one, usually advocates don't engage directly with clients. You have to engage directly with the attorney. The attorney is the one who's going to engage with the advocate, unless it's an advocate who practices for their own account. They've amended the law. So what usually happens is that we give you a consent letter or a mandate agreement that kind of breaks down the fees. So if they're refusing to give you the fees and you haven't engaged them on in terms of you now saying that you are now my attorney, can we move forward? There's really nothing you can do because you are asking for a quote. But if you've already engaged their services and they're refusing to tell you how much this would be, that is a problem because you need to know what the agreement is. You can't now be stiffed with the bill, 100,000, when you don't know how it was broken down. Yes, things like disbursements will be like emails, phone calls, traveling to the sheriff, all those things. Those will vary depending on the times and whatnot, but there should be a general idea of how much from beginning to end it will cost you to finish your matter. That should be within the mandate agreement between you and your counsel. So if you already engage them as your attorney and you are requesting this information, you can go and report them to the LPC for unethical behavior, because they're supposed to tell you. And when you sign that mandate, they usually say it's approximately, because it can be higher or it can be lower, depending on how intricate your matter is. So, but they give you a roundabout estimated figure how much it could possibly cost going forward. Now, when it comes to the divorce and selling or buying out, what we usually do, and most attorneys ought to do, is that they put in the settlement agreement that this person should be able to buy you out within 60 days, 90 days from date of divorce. Because unlike a situation where you're going to sell the property, you are relying on the market for somebody to come and purchase the property. But when it comes to you being bought out, that person can go and apply for a loan if they don't have the money to buy you out of the property and give you your cash component. So if they're not doing it and there's no real time frame that was put in there, what I would suggest is that you speak to your attorney and make an application to compel them to adhere to the court order. But the downside is that because there's no real time frame, the court will be saying, you know, and what is reasonable? Is reasonable a year, 2 years, 6 months, 2 months? So you would have to weigh up the options, let your attorney look at case law and see what the courts have determined to be a reasonable time for somebody to buy another out. So, yeah, those are things you'd have to discuss with your lawyer.
There's another voice note.
So what happens in the case of putting an advert? Gary, we are now saying it's not about my company rules, but it's about the law. In a case of putting an advert, what are the laws when it comes to describing what I want to employ? Am I allowed to say I don't want a gay person applying or a lesbian person applying? I want a straight person sexually to apply. Am I allowed to state it that way? Because if I'm not allowed to state it that way and I don't want that, how do I then deal with it when I get such situation? He comes wearing a suit, walking nicely. 2 weeks later or after his probation, 3 months, he then becomes Madame Gigi. What then? So what are the rules in terms of what I can stipulate on my advert when I'm looking for an employee? What can I say? What can I not say?
I'm so sorry, guys. Because, what an excellent question. What an excellent question. Because, and I'll be saying, it brings us to that thing that you get to see, you know, at the restaurants. Right of admission reserved.
Yeah.
I think it falls within the same kind of murky water in this sense. You are not allowed, my brother, to explicitly be racist, be a bigot, and act, the list is on is ongoing. So you can't be saying, "I do not want white men." You can't say that. You can speak to your preference, but you in the same breath, you cannot be a bigot. You cannot be a racist. You cannot be all those things. You cannot be sexist. You can't do that. It's not. You would be going against the law, so it would be wrong. What you can do, you can speak to your preferences, but in such a way that it does not discriminate others. Do you see what I'm saying? So you can say, which is what they do with BEE policies, right? There's a preference. You can state your preferences. But the thing about the BEE law is that it's a policy. So you can't say, I want heterosexual people. You can't say that.
Yeah.
That's not... I don't know how to help you. You can't say that. You can say things like, I don't know, you know, the best candidate will be someone that fits our culture. I don't know, like the I don't know.
So
I'm Marluena.
The way I be.
Luena. I fix you. I want that. It doesn't work like that. This is South Africa. Anybody, I can come to you wearing a skirt today and I can come with a beard tomorrow. It's my choice. Ne? It's not allowed, what you're saying.
No, it's really not.
No.
So, Section 6 of the Employment
And quickly before we get to Tabi Seng's legal argument, here's the thing, my brother. I can come to you today coming in a skirt and I can change my mind a year later. I can change my mind. In other words, today I was this and tomorrow I can decide and I can come with a beard. You have no business coming into my business. Just when Anjay, just be okay with what people are. Hey, la bona ge jano, restatile. Ntabi saying mutus.
Yeah.
So. You can't do that. You can't say that and you can't do that. I'm just helping you. You can't do that. You cannot do that. Ntabi saying tusa abutuabato.
Point of view.
Legal matters.
I wonder you ain't drinking beer in
that. You're saying, okay, fine, I understand your answer. It makes sense. But now I want to understand, can the banks use the same law to say, let's say I die and then I have separate stuff like an alidikoloto? Can my wife be told to pay those things based on the same law that says it's in community of property? Meaning she'll be owing whatever the stuff that I could have done when I am alive. Okay, thank you for the answer.
We have so many things to answer. Mable,
I've joined in.
Agrees with this gentleman.
No, I do not agree with the gentleman. Let me tell you something. The law, as you said, there's no room for homophobia, for misogyny, for all of that.
Yeah.
But if you are running a business, there are certain things that you can say. Let me just give you an example of a church. That's why ushers need to look a certain way. You say that it's not, but what the problem with what this gentleman said, when uzothi, okay, I need you to be this way, ugqoke isuit nani. Uzoyifika ubhuti egqoke i 2-piece next week. Still, it's in line with what you asked for. You get, hey, bhuti wami usenkingeni, bra. In South Africa, uzacabanga kanje, yo.
I agree with you. It's just fix yourself.
You know?
That's the only advice.
That's the thing.
Mm-mm. It's not allowed.
Listen, you cannot.
It's not allowed.
Whatever you do, you need to dress a certain way in front of clients. You need to be presentable in front of clients. That's where it ends, my brother, for you in terms of your policy. If my brother tomorrow, we have to say, it's 2-piece. You have a suit in a 2-piece. Ufaki 2-piece and afaki kwai kwai. At him in front of office nenchebe yak usenkinge bra. Thank you.
Tabi saying rumsebetingo. Rumsebeting. Araba ngwana ba.
I've been trying to answer. So, that Section 6 of the Employment Equity Act. I want to read it for you so you understand in word for word. It says, no person may unfairly discriminate directly or indirectly against an employee in any employment policy or practice on one or more grounds, including race, gender, sex, pregnancy, marital status, family responsibility, ethnic or social origin, color, sexual orientation, age, disability, religion, HIV status, conscience, belief, political opinion, culture, language, birth, or any other arbitrary ground. So that your advert cannot be like this. You cannot show that you are discriminatory in that manner. You cannot. Okay, I hope that answers.
Yeah, just when Anjay, go home tonight and, you know, pull yourself towards yourself. Just Anjay, amo? Just deal with how you feel, and that's all we can help you with.
Yeah,
no. It would be wrong for us to advise you otherwise. Ne?
Yeah.
We would be putting you in trouble.
Yeah.
But also, Arisa, that's all I can tell you. You are going to account for telling people what they can be and what they cannot be. That is not allowed, not in this country. Ntabi saying, where can people find you?
Oh, yeah. There was one voice note. Should we attend
yes,
to
yes,
that?
Yes, yes, yes. Somebody about somebody asking if when they have died, can they attach their things?
Yes.
And yes.
So if you're married in commutative property, it means your liabilities, your debts, and your assets are those of your spouse as well. So it means that if you die without having settled anything, your spouse, or rather your estate, and usually your spouse who ends up being the executor of your estate, is going to be liable for all those things. So yes, it is necessary for you to make sure that you leave a will, make sure that you settle your estate before you die. And I would always say get life insurance that is going to pay directly to your spouse. That way they have money to pay for things in case your estate is insolvent.
Where do people find you?
So people can call us on 087-265-8010 or send us a WhatsApp on 079-654-7523 or send us an email on info@dubazanaattorneys.co.za. We are at 37 Harley Street in Randburg.
Oh, guys, it was lovely being with you tonight. Let's do this again tomorrow at 8.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.